When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo. This is the Electric Drum. Now, this morning I have with me Cindy J. Cadet. She's a children's author, and she has a book series called the Brownie Kids Series. And we're going to be talking today about her books, of course, and also about her life. She is from West Haven, right? A resident of New Haven since 2002, but she actually graduated from West Haven High School. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. So let's start off. So now, you grew up in New Haven?
No, I actually was born in Miami, Florida, but I grew up in West Haven, Connecticut. I started kindergarten in West Haven, Connecticut.
Oh, so okay. All right. So pretty much your formative years, you spent them here. Mm-hmm. Tell me about growing up in West Haven.
Growing up in West Haven was really great for me. I actually made a lot of friends. I played volleyball and I ran track. And I was able to do quite a bit of different, you know, things as far as community work. I started volunteering at the VA hospital when I was 13. And it's definitely different from New Haven, because once I moved to New Haven, the diversity was definitely different. Mm-hmm. I was surrounded, you know, predominantly with... I was surrounded predominantly by... Caucasian individuals, right. And then when I went to Southern, that's when I really started to get diverse. I'm Haitian American.
Okay.
So when I went to Southern is when I started to communicate and meet other Haitian Americans, because I didn't really have that many Haitian Americans growing up in my town.
Oh, okay. So tell me about your family. Tell me about your family.
Well, I grew up with my mom and my two beautiful sisters, yes. Jean and Rosalie.
Okay.
And, we had a pretty good upbringing. As I said, we grew up in West Haven, so we all graduated. Actually, me and my sister Rosalie graduated from West Haven High, and my other sister graduated from Platt in Milford.
Wonderful, wonderful. And now when you were in high school, tell me about, well, you mentioned volleyball, right?
Yes.
You like that. When did you start thinking about when did your love for books and reading, when did that start?
Well, I became a published author in 2011, but I consider myself a writer since I was a child. Mm. I used to always love to read and write. I would write in the newspaper in high school and even in college. So I would do articles. I would cover stories. So I love writing. I actually prefer, that's my preferred way of communicating is writing, because I can get, just feel like I can just put all I have inside on paper and able to express myself that
right.
way.
Now, when did you go to school in West Haven, at West Haven High School? What year?
I graduated in 99, so I went from 95 to 99.
Right, okay, so you sort of grew up in the 90s.
Yes, I'm an 80s baby.
You're an 80s baby, yeah, mm-hmm. but kind of grew up in the 90s,
yes.
when you really could understand what was happening with life out here.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you know, like you said, you went to, you know, when you went to West Haven High School, you know, primarily, you know, it was mostly whites, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of what you were influenced by to some degree. Your friends were white,
yes.
right? You know, and so forth and so on. But I mean, you know, growing up in America as a black person is different, right?
Yes, absolutely,
you know,
different.
We know that, and with all, you know, with all of the things that are happening, you know, right now in our country, race is an important issue, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and however, you know, your upbringing is not really the norm, right?
No, my upbringing is not the norm. And I have to say that growing up in West Haven, I actually didn't really recognize the racism, but I definitely, as a young a woman, have experienced a lot of pushback, and I feel it's because of the color of my skin. When I was growing up, I like, race wasn't an issue in our household. My mom never just, had a talk with us about racial issues. But I find myself having to have those conversations now with my daughter, and we live in the inner city because of all that's going on. And we even actually went down to the rally on Friday, after the same Friday that the shooting happened down in Dallas. We were on the green rallying, and I had to explain to my daughter some things that I never thought I'd have to explain to her at 5 years old. Right. But
by the same token, right? It's interesting, because I know for myself. Oh, by the way, family out there, this is Juan Castillo. Of course, you listen to Electric Drummers. For those who just tuned in, I'm interviewing Cindy Cadet. She's a children's author. Grew up in West Haven in her formative years. But also, went to school in West Haven High School during the 90s. And we're going to talk about, her, college, too, when she went to SCSU. But we're talking now about, the issue of race. It pops up all the time on this show, and however, the reality of it is that's what the situation is. And when you're talking about someone's life with this, what this show is all about, you have to talk about that if it's a black person, right? Not that you have to talk about it, but it's an issue, but in any case, for me, it was opposite, right? I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I went to all black high school. There was one white person in my whole school. And in my neighborhood was kind of diverse, but it was more diverse in terms of, Hispanics, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to experience relationships and friendships, with white folks until I left high school, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a positive thing for me, right? Because I got an opportunity to see what their thoughts and their feelings were, and they were pretty open with me about it, and I was open with them about me, mm-hmm. right? And to this day, that has helped me, right? I have some great friendships that I've developed with different people, right?
Absolutely.
Of all races, of all religions, right? How has it affected you?
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because that was my husband's experience. He actually grew up in Brooklyn, New York as well.
Okay.
And he was predominantly surrounded by other African Americans. For me, it was a difference, because my mindset coming out of, I guess you could say, the suburbs, was that I just had this mindset that everybody pretty much did things the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came to New Haven and started to develop relationships with people in my neighborhood, I just saw such a big difference, and I was just really shocked. Even now that my daughter is in the public school systems in New Haven, it's really shocking. Her first year of school was so shocking to me that just the difference between the level of expectation from town to town is like completely different. And it's like, I've actually been on the board and have attended several meetings trying to get some equal opportunities for my daughter and for the other children in New Haven, because I believe that they overlook the inner city kids. And
wow.
I don't think that that's fair at all. And I'm very passionate about getting equal rights for the students in New Haven.
And that's whether black or white. Right?
Absolutely. Because my daughter is in the classroom. It's a melt. As everyone knows, New Haven is a melting pot. There's black, white, Spanish.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. Which is
absolutely
great. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's interesting. But again, so you graduated from West Haven High School, and then you went to SCSU.
Yes.
Right? Tell me about that experience.
So that was once I graduated. Because initially when I graduated, I had a lot of friends saying, oh, I'm going to SCSU. And actually, that wasn't my first school choice. I actually wanted to go out of state, but my mom was against that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to SCSU, that is when the culture shock hit me. Because I just was surrounded by all different kinds of races. And I got to formulate friendships and relationships and get to know different backgrounds, And I just had a really good experience actually at Southern, because it just opened my mind to different aspects of how people think and how people act and their rituals and stuff like that. So it was very different.
Made you a better person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. It made me a better person. It made me a more well-rounded person at that, because like I said, I just knew of West Haven, and we didn't really come to New Haven as much.
And it's interesting because you mentioned that, you know, you had been to the rally, you know, and of course this show, you know, is going to air much later, so folks understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And that rally was really all about,
equal rights
for everyone,
and
you know,
justice.
And especially in the criminal justice system. And so, you know, you're kind of like, you know, the kind of person that, you know, America needs to know that, you know, just because you are protesting for that does not mean that you're a racist.
Absolutely not.
Right? You know,
absolutely not.
I completely opposite of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That,
yes.
You know, your experience is to have dealt with a lot of different people. And you got a much different perspective about that, right?
Yes, absolutely. I am not a racist. I have been around all kinds of different ethnicities, and I appreciate the differences that each culture brings. But I also believe that we all should be treated equal. And when folks do not understand the difference when we say Black Lives Matter, we're not trying to say all lives don't matter. It's just right now, there's a lot going on in the Black community, and we need to face those issues. And that's why I am taking a stand. I have done a few different things in the city, trying to figure out how to help make a difference and be part of the solution instead of the problem.
And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, this conversation, I don't just come out and talk about this, you know, because my regular show is about music, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to keep people happy during the day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I kind of stay away from the politics, you know, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not immune to it. You know, and I'm not going to shut up just because I'm on the radio and, you know, I got to say the politically right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interestingly enough, I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the name could have been something else. You know, it didn't have to be All Lives Matter. It could have been, you know, Concerned Citizens for Equality, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know
what mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden, you know, the name is now becoming the issue more about what people are standing up for and against, right?
Yes.
So now it's like, okay, oh, all lives matter. So what, you're saying that all other lives don't matter? And that's not the case.
No.
You know, I mean, it really
And
isn't.
We never said that. And it's like the news, I feel, is trying to make a division as opposed to creating unity. And that's what we need, is unity for everybody to understand the struggle of being Black in America. And
right.
when the
or
news,
Muslim in America or brown skin in America
or Mexican
or yeah, the mm-hmm. whole nine, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and that's an important thing, you know. And then the other issue now, you know, because, you know, there's been, you know some crimes committed against police officers, which mm-hmm. in my case, you know, I was in, you know, I worked in the law enforcement field, so, you know, I've been in mourning, you know, for all the brothers, you know, and sisters, you know, who have lost their lives, you know, working in the criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
good officers, you mm-hmm. know, that have died, you know, at the hands of folks that somehow feel like, you know, they need to, you know, have some retribution, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that's not right, you know.
No, absolutely.
Same
not.
Way as not, it's not right for any ordinary citizen, especially a Black citizen, because there's been too many cases as such of, you know, Black men dying at the hands of the police. And in some cases,
Black women too.
And Black women too. Absolutely. Sandra
mm-hmm.
Bland,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it should not have happened. Right.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's interesting because sometimes I tell people this, right? It's like sometimes someone gets shot by the police and it might not be the fact that they shot the police, they shot that person, in error,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be that that person got shot because of extreme racism,
mm-hmm.
right? It might be also fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like the media, which is not this radio station, portrays Black men as and women
mm-hmm.
as a threat,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And so someone going into, you know, doing that job,
mm-hmm.
just having that idea in
mm-hmm.
your mind, you know, can cause you to not do your job to the best of your ability, right? You know, because you come in with these preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone keeps saying, you know, it's not a lot of officers, you know, because it's not, right? But it's a significant amount, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and me coming from the field that I've come from, right? I saw it, right? But I spoke out to it. Mm-hmm. And I also was a supervisor. So I supervised my people in a way where, like, I was always working with them around trying to not act on whatever emotions and feelings you might have mm-hmm. about, you know...
particular race.
Yeah, that particular race or that particular neighborhood, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
You know, and all of that, right? And that's a difficult thing to do. After you've been doing a job for 15, 20 years and you're dealing with the same people all the time, mm-hmm. you know, it's you got to dig deep for you not to have those feelings that, well, everybody's like that. And every time I confront somebody, that's what I'm going to get. No, that ain't the case, right? You got to mm-hmm. keep fighting, right? Those feelings. But, you know, getting back to you now, right? You know, you're an educated person, you know, who, you know, has had, you know, a life that, you know, has been pretty much, you know, dealing with a lot of different people, diverse type situation. So you go to college, you begin to learn even more so, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you start thinking about writing, yes. right? Tell me about that process and how did you decide that you wanted to do children's books?
Well, right? When I graduated college in 2003 with my bachelor's, I actually had graduated with a bachelor's in communication. My focus was video production. I wanted to get into television production, but I also, in the back of my mind, always wanted to release a book. I wasn't sure which avenue I would go into until I became pregnant. After I got married, we were expecting. So I would go to bookstores, go to libraries, looking for stuff that my daughter would be able to read and relate to. And there wasn't much out there for her to show that there is excitement in the Black community. I mean, there's books about our history, which is great, and I do teach my daughter about our history. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also wanted something that she can understand that she can do as well. Because reading, you know, different materials that you see, children of Caucasian children doing, you know, fun things in their books, but in our Black books, it was either talking about our hair or talking about our history. Mm. And I was just like, okay, I need to create something that's going to be fun so to help encourage children to want to read. Because as a 5-year-old, I mean, yeah, it's okay. It's good to, you know, to talk to them a little bit about their history, but I don't think they want to sit around reading books about what happened.
Not too exciting.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So you started this series.
Yes, I started the series. The Brownie Kid series. There's right. 3 books in there. The first book was actually published in time for my daughter's first birthday.
Mm.
And the first title is The Brownie Girl Adventures. And the reason why I came up with that, actually, I was going to come up... I wanted to name the series Abby's Adventures because my daughter's name is Abigail. But because that title was actually already taken, I was in my kitchen one day making brownies, and it just dawned on me that I should just go with brownies because I love brownies, and I'm pretty sure there are a lot of kids who love brownies as well.
Right.
So that's how the title came about. And with the first book, I actually, it's a family vacation book.
Yes.
But I don't pick any certain destination for the simple fact that I want children who read this book and parents who read this book with their children to understand that anywhere you go, you can create an adventure, whether it be the park, the zoo, the beach, wherever you go, you can create an adventure, help your children to understand these are memories that you're making with your children. You don't necessarily have to get on a plane to travel and experience stuff outside of your community.
Right. Wonderful. Now, great illustrations here. Who did the illustrations?
I actually collaborated with an illustrator that was in-house with the publishing company that I had.
Wonderful, wonderful work. And then, so you've got 3 books. The other one was Zola Visits the Sioux, A Fun Day Adventure with Daddy.
Yes, and that you was know, very important to me.
Tell me why.
Because, you know, as Black men in the community, they get a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is a very dedicated father, and I wanted to create something that would show all the little kids that our dads matter as well. So I wanted something that was tangible that they can look at and say, oh, you know, this is exciting. I can do this with my dad too. So that's the reason why I definitely did that for the second book.
That's fantastic. And the third one was Kid Squad, The Best Day Ever.
Yes.
Tell me about that book.
I actually was going to just go with the Brownie Girl Adventure series, but right. I would have parents asking me, when are you going to do something for the boys? When are you going to do something for the boys? So then when I started to write for the third book, I was like, okay, I need to put boy characters in my book. So I came up with the Brownie Kid Squad, and my daughter's actually one of the characters in this book. She actually helped me to create her own character because she loves to wear tutus, and so her favorite color is pink. So we sat together, I you know, went over some things with her, and she actually created her own character, and we you know, worked on this book together, which was very special.
That's awesome. I got two more questions. Mm-hmm. One, which we didn't get into, your Haitian background.
Yes.
Right. Tell me about that, and how's that influenced your life, and tell us about the Haitian culture.
Well, the thing is, I was born here. My mom and my dad are Haitian, and my husband is actually Haitian as well.
Oh, okay.
So we're all Haitian, and my mom was a very strict mom. Mm-hmm. So she did instill some fear in us, which helped
you
us
need
to
that.
Yeah, yeah, which helped, I think, to keep us grounded and to keep us thinking about our studies and making sure we got good grades and stuff like that. Where it's a very, you know, welcoming culture. There's so many different rituals that we do, and sometimes even growing up in West Haven, when people were to hear Haitian, they would think all of a sudden the stereotype of voodoo dolls, which was like not the case, because mm-hmm. I never even saw a voodoo doll ever in my life.
Yes.
So actually,
dismiss that now.
Yeah, definitely. And so even when I was growing up, I was sometimes a little, not embarrassed, but just I would keep that part of me under wraps because I didn't want people to make fun of me or come up with those stereotypes.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I went to Southern where I was exposed to so many other Haitian people that I felt like, okay, I can own my culture and be proud of my culture. And since then, college, being at Southern, definitely helped me to be, you know, a proud Haitian American woman.
Tell me about something about the culture that we can educate some folks out there about the Haitian culture. Can you tell us something?
Sure. Well, we are very hardworking people.
Of course.
We treat people with respect. We like to welcome people into our homes, and we're very loyal, and we love to dance. We love to celebrate. We celebrate everything. Yes, we do eat rice and beans. It's a Caribbean thing that we do. It's a Caribbean thing that we do.
You know, we got Zola in the building too, right?
Yeah, well,
Abigail,
yes.
Right, that's what Abigail,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And so our music is very catchy. When we celebrate, we have great music, great bands, and
Any rites of passage that you can share with us in the Haitian culture, like when you get a certain age, certain things happen?
Oh, yes. Well, the thing is, in the Haitian culture, usually you stay, the females, you stay home until you get married.
Oh.
And I kind of went against the grain with that one. But yeah, well, you stay home when you get married. The traditional way is to honor your parents. So the male would, you know, ask for the girl's hand in marriage, which thankfully my husband did.
Yes.
And so yeah, we stick together, we work together, and we make family first. We put family
That's
first.
Great, wonderful. So last question. You know, first of all, no, before I get that last. How do folks get the book?
Well, my book actually, yes, my book series I sell on my website.
Okay.
And I it's also available online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also available on my publisher's website, which is exlibris.com.
Okay.
And I have two Facebook pages, one with the Brownie Girl, and then the other one is the Brownie Kid Squad.
That's wonderful.
And the best way to contact me is via email at thebrowniekidsquad@gmail.com.
Any advice for, you know, prospective authors on how to get published and what to do?
I think initially you need to find what you're passionate about, because once you find that passion, the writing will come. And I once was told to accept criticism by a teacher in high school. And at that time, I didn't really understand where she was going with that. But as I got older and worked in different fields, I understood to not only accept it, but I also analyze it, because that's a way for me to get better. So as an author, I would write, and I would also get opinions from other people, like my husband, my family, my friends, just because I want my best work out there. So definitely surround yourself with people who are going to encourage you, because it is a tough field. I didn't get in this to get rich, but at the same time, I do, you know, want to make a profit, because I do share my proceeds with two children charities.
What are they?
The children's charities, one is a Haitian charity, which is called IIT Denouement. They do they get textbooks, brand new textbooks for the children down in Haiti.
Nice.
And then the other one is Project Night Night, which is based in California, and their organization collects a goodie bag with a blanket, a teddy bear, and a book for children who are homeless.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, who's your favorite author?
My favorite author is Maya Angelou. I read a lot of her books, and she's very inspirational. And the impact that she's had on so many lives, I hope to have that kind of impact. And not just through my books, but through my actions, the work that I do in the community, and how I connect with other people, and how I treat other people, and how I'm raising my daughter to treat others.
Right. Cindy J. Cadet, children's author. We've been talking to her now for about half an hour. She's got a book series, the Brownie Kids series. You can get those at Amazon
and Barnes & Noble.
And Barnes & Noble online, yep. And before you go, tell us, what's the best advice you ever gotten from who?
I had mentioned before to accept constructive criticism, because I grew up thinking, you know, with my mom being so strict, there was always a way, she always wanted us to do things a certain way.
Yes.
And so I was always very aware of how to do things. I had a structure. I was very planned. And so as I grew up, I just had to let that go and relax a little, and just to accept things for, you know, different reasons. And
who advised you?
My senior teacher, her name is Miss Collins.
Oh, okay. Big ups to her.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if she's still at the high school. I haven't been back to the high school, but
that's
awesome. She absolutely,
that's great.
And she prepared me for college, because some teachers don't do is help the students understand, once you get to college, it is not time to play. They give you assignments, like each class you take, you know, five to six classes, and you will get assignments that are time consuming and very mind boggling. So you have to develop good study habits, and you have to be focused, and you have to want to complete your degree so you can stay focused on your tasks.
Absolutely. Cindy Cadet, thank you so much for coming. Good luck, with the books. And, I think you've been extremely inspiring to the community and also to prospective authors. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you. I'm so happy for this opportunity.
Juan Castillo with you. This is Electric Drum. I know you've been inspired. I know I have. We will see you next week right here on the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.